December 16th, 1944, Adolf Hitler launched his last major offensive on the Western Front in the Second World War. And this offensive caught the Allied powers completely off guard because they thought that Germany was on their last leg. They thought the war was about to be over, and they didn't think that Germans had that many troops ready to fight. And the Germans moved very quickly, creating a bulge in the Allied forces' lines. That's why it's known to us as the Battle of the Bulge. And if Hitler and the Germans were successful, then they would have broken through the Allied lines, and they would have gained access to these crossroads. And these crossroads would have completed a German supply line that would have made the war last months longer. It probably wouldn't have meant a German victory, but it would have been a much longer war. And Eisenhower knew that, and so on the next day, on December 17th, he sent all of his available soldiers to that front to fight in the Bulge. And among these soldiers was the 101st Airborne, and they were driven in trucks, and they had a very difficult assignment of protecting those crossroads to keep that supply line open and not connected. And the 101st Airborne troops, they had been in combat almost non-ceasingly, non-stop, since June 6th for 6 full months. And when they were dropped out of airplanes to fight on the beaches of Normandy. And so they were exhausted. They hadn't had any rest. They were ill-supplied. They didn't have enough guns, not enough ammunition. But they knew that they had this task to complete. And so they took what they had, and as they made their way to the crossroads, they marched there because the trucks couldn't get there all the way. And as they were going, the other Allied forces had retreated, and they were saying, "Turn back. You're not going to make it. The Germans have firepower. They have tanks. They have air power. They have everything, and you will die." But they kept marching on, and they found themselves surrounded by German troops once they got to the crossroads. And so they woke up every day for the next few weeks knowing that they were in a battle. They had to fight every day once they woke up to keep their lives and to keep the war in the Allied forces' favor. Every day they knew they were in a battle. Good afternoon. A lot of you are visiting with us tonight, and I'm certainly glad that you're here, and I welcome you here as we have now begun our gospel meeting, as we learn how to fight the good fight, and as we are in a daily battle ourselves as Christians. And if you can, we invite you to be back tomorrow night and Tuesday night and Wednesday night at 7 o'clock as we continue this series. All of us as Christians, as we are tempted every day by Satan, we are in a daily battle. And according to General Douglas MacArthur, when he was asked the single most important thing to win a war, he said, is to know who you're fighting, to know your enemy. And as Christians, our enemy is Satan. And tonight, I want us to look in the first two chapters of Job chapters 1 and 2, to take a look at our enemy and see what kind of enemy we're facing and how we can resist him and follow our God and our King. And now, the first two chapters of Job are more than just a story of a man. It's a story that's well known. We read about Job a lot, and he's certainly a great example, and there's a lot of different applications that we can make from his story. But Job also gives us an opportunity to look at things from a little bit different perspective. And we get to see who is at work behind the scenes. And it's an opportunity we have to view the activity of our enemy, the devil. So what do we get from Job chapter 1 and chapter 2? It starts off very quickly in Job chapter 1, verse 7, when the Lord said to Satan, "Where have you come from?" And Satan answers and says, "Going to and fro the earth and from walking up and down on it." And this, I think, is a little bit of a myth buster from how modern society views Satan. A lot of people view him as the king of hell. He is the ruler of hell, and he stays down there with his pitchfork or his trident, whatever you want to call it, and he waits there and lives there, and he torments people because they were evil when they lived on the earth. But that's not what Satan does. He roams the earth. He is close to us. That's exactly how Peter described him in the scripture reading tonight in 1 Peter chapter 5, verse 8. He's a roaring lion waiting to devour people. He's not waiting in hell for people to come to him. And hell is not Satan's dwelling place. It's not where he lives. In Matthew chapter 25 and verse 41, we read about this judgment scene that says that hell was prepared for Satan and his angels to be banished there. It was not supposed to be his home, and it's not his home. It is a place of banishment where he will be tormented just like every other soul who is unfit to be in the presence of God. We also read that in Revelation 20, verse 10. So for now, he lives here on this earth, roaming around, and he's always near, always around. John verse 12 in verse 31 refers to Satan as the ruler of the world. And that's a quote from Jesus. And Jesus also said to the church at Pergamum in Revelation 2, Revelation 2, verse 13, I know where you dwell, where Satan's home is. Yet you hold fast to my name, and you did not deny my faith. So, Satan's kingdom is all around us. And we see evidence of that everywhere. Satan was not afraid to approach the very first people who ever lived on this earth. He wasn't even afraid to approach Jesus. And he's definitely not afraid to approach us as well. So Satan is close to us. And not only is Satan close to us, but he is aware of us. Satan was very much aware of Job. He knew exactly who God was talking about when God says in verse 8, Have you considered my servant Job, that there is none like him on the earth, a blameless and upright man who fears God and turns away from evil? And then Satan answered him, and Satan didn't say, No, I don't know who Job is. Who's Job? He says, Yeah, I know who he is. Of course he's faithful because you've put this hedge around him. So Satan knew exactly who he was and what he did and what he had and what God had blessed him with. And he'd been watching him. And you can be certain that he watches us too. He's not all-knowing like God is, but he studies us. And so what do you think Satan would say is your breaking point? How does he tempt you? And this is a little bit of a side point, because it's not different enough to make a different point, but it's kind of separated. Satan tempts us based on what makes us want. I'm going to gather my words again for a second. Satan tempts us based on our desires, and our desires are all different. Whether that be anger, pleasure, frustration, greed, lust, popularity, pride, poverty. Some of those things may not tempt you, but they do tempt me. Satan didn't go and tempt Job by giving him an opportunity to lie or an opportunity to steal. He knew that wouldn't work, and so he did something else. So Satan tempts us with different things because we desire different things. So what if God and Satan had that same conversation about you? Would God call you blameless, upright, fearing God, and turning away from evil? Because that's exactly how he described Job. Or would God call you his servant at all? Would he even say to Satan, would you consider my servant Hayden or Rex or Beth? We need to make sure that we can be a part of that conversation so that Satan does try to go after us and tempt us the way that he did with Job. Satan knows us and he knows who we are. Also, Satan is a warrior. And like we said earlier, Satan is more than a cartoon character in a red suit who lives in hell. Or the little evil person on your shoulder that tries to get you to cheat on your math homework when you know you shouldn't. God tells Satan in verse 12 of chapter 1, Behold, all that he has is in your hand. And then from that on, From then on, Job's trials begin. His livestock's taken. His servants are killed. His house collapses. And his 10 children are killed when his house collapses. That right there is enough to make a lot of people completely give up. But Satan wasn't even through yet. Because in verse 6 of chapter 2, God tells Satan, he is in your power. And then Satan attacks his health. And also, Satan is a warrior who doesn't always engage in open warfare. These things that happened to Job, nobody would look at them and say, wow, that's fantastic. They knew it was bad. But in 2 Corinthians chapter 11, in 2 Corinthians chapter 11 and verse 14, Paul describes Satan as an angel of light. Well, he describes him as disguising himself as an angel of light. So if Satan seems like an angel of light, then he seems pretty good. He might make you think that what you're doing is really good for you and that it's really pleasing, but it's not. It'll be detrimental to your faith. He disguises himself as an angel of light. And that's a really scary thing to think about. When you can think you're doing something right or you think something is good for you, but really it's a temptation coming from Satan. But here's something that's good that we learn about Satan. We learn that his power is limited by an omnipotent God. Even Satan has to operate within the boundaries that are set by God. In Job 12, chapter 1, verse 12, only against him do not stretch out your hand. So Satan went out from the presence of the Lord. And then in 2 verse 6, behold, he is in your hand, only spare his life. So Satan had restrictions and he had to act within those restrictions. And also we see in Luke chapter 22, Satan had to ask for forgiveness, or not forgiveness, ask for permission to tempt Job, and he had to ask for permission to tempt Peter. Luke 22 and verse 31. Simon, Simon, behold, Satan demanded to have you, that he might sift you like wheat. But I have prayed for you that your faith may not fail. And when you have turned again, strengthen your brothers. And I think what's interesting about verse 31 is that when Jesus is talking to Peter, he says, Satan demanded to have you. That you in the Greek is the plural form for you. So Satan didn't only ask for Peter, and I think it's safe to assume that he's asked for everybody. He wants everybody to fail and to be banished with him in hell. But another thing that is encouraging for us is that he cannot force us to sin. In 1 Corinthians 10, verse 13, no temptation has overtaken you that is not common to man. God is faithful, and he will not let you be tempted beyond your ability, but with the temptation he will also provide the way of escape that you might be able to endure it. A lot of you know that I'm in nursing school right now, and one of my professors, when we were in class, were talking about things never to say to patients. And one of the things they said was, never say God will not push you past your limits, because he most certainly will. And I sit front and center, and I was like, no, he won't. And they didn't care what I had to think, of course, because they have doctorates and I don't. But that shocked me that was such a common opinion. And, you know, you could hear like the agreement in the room. And people somehow think that God just wants you to be pushed past your breaking point, and he wants you to suffer, and he wants to test you to where you're never going to be able to come back from it. And that is not true. We see that, I mean, it blatantly states God is faithful and he will not let you be tempted beyond your ability. He will not make you do something that is against his will. So however we are tempted, God knows that we're strong enough to overcome it. We go through different things, but he wants us to succeed. And Satan wants us to fail. And if we trust in God to deliver us from Satan, then Satan's power won't mean anything. Because when we fight along an omnipotent, all-powerful God, Satan is nothing. And finally, Satan is relentless. Because when Job maintained his integrity, Satan just kept on going and made it worse. He intensified his attack. Job resisted when he took away his possessions and his livestock and his property, his children, and so he took away his health. In verse 2, in chapter 2, verses 1 through 7 of Job, again there was a day when the Son of God came to present, when the sons of God came to present themselves before the Lord, and Satan also came among them to present himself before the Lord. And the Lord said to Satan, "From where have you come?" Satan answered and said, "From going to and fro on the earth and walking up and down on it." And the Lord said to Satan, "Have you considered my servant Job, that there is none like him on the earth, a blameless and upright man who fears God and turns away from evil? He still holds fast his integrity, although you incited me against him to destroy him without reason." Then Satan answered the Lord and said, "Skin for skin. All that a man has he will give for his life, but stretch out your hand and touch his bone and flesh, and he will curse you to your face." And the Lord said to Satan, "Behold, he is in your hand, only spare his life." So Satan went out from the presence of the Lord and struck Job with loathsome sores from the sole of his foot to the crown of his head. And he took a broken piece of pottery with which to scrape himself while he sat in the ashes. Satan intensified his attack so much to where Job had to take a broken piece of pottery and scratch his sores. But even in that, Job stood firm and maintained his integrity. And also, when Jesus was tempted by the devil, he resisted. And then the devil left him. But in Luke chapter 4, we see that the devil comes back. He comes back even after Jesus resists him. And when the devil had ended every temptation, he departed from him until an opportune time. So even after you beat the devil and you feel like, "Yeah, I got him. That's a good one. I knew he was trying to get me, but I didn't let him." He left. But he's just going to come back when he thinks he can get you again. And I'm sure that most of us have had a moment where we have thought that we have made the devil run. Where we know that what we just went through was a big trial for us, and we know that Satan was at the bottom of it, and we resisted him. And in James chapter 4 and 7, it says, "Resist the devil, and he will flee from you." But he's going to come back, because Satan's already committed his life to ultimately be banished in hell. He's not going to change. And he's going to keep coming back for you because he knows that you're not going to end up in hell tortured with him. And this is just my opinion. I'm not saying you have to do this, but don't be afraid to be vocal when you're resisting Satan. Because I feel like a lot of the time, if I'm not actually thinking about Satan, then I'll think, you know, well, this is a test. You know, God's testing me. But that's not necessarily true. Satan's at the bottom of all the things that you're tempted with. And when I've found that when I notice that and I say out loud or in my head, "Get away from me, Satan," then that makes it so much easier to resist. That's what Jesus did. Jesus was vocal towards Satan. And you don't have to do that, but what you can't do is you can't pretend that Satan's not there. You can't forget that, because he is, and he will keep coming back. Satan has nothing to lose but your soul. He already knows where he's going to go, and he's trying to drag you down with him. And I want to read one more verse from 1 John. 1 John chapter 3 and verse 8. "Whoever makes a practice of sinning is of the devil, for the devil has been sinning from the beginning. The reason the Son of God appeared was to destroy the works of the devil. Jesus' mission was to destroy the works of the devil. And when we talked about this morning about joining the battle and joining God's side, and that means that our goal also is to destroy the devil. We need to make sure that we're fighting on the Lord's side. Because if we're not, then we're on the devil's side. Douglas MacArthur also said that there is no substitute for victory. And that's right. There's no substitute for heaven either. There's no middle ground. It's either heaven or hell, the Lord, our God and King, or Satan. And there are going to be days where we lose the battle. There are going to be days where we mess up, and we know we've messed up. But we know from 1 John chapter 1, verse 9, that if we confess ourselves to God, that He is faithful and He is just and He will cleanse us and He will purify us. We need to say, look, I know I was defeated today, but I will not be defeated tomorrow. We need to put on the armor of God, which is what Jason will be talking about to us tomorrow evening. And we need to prepare ourselves to get ready to fight against Satan when he returns, because Satan is all around us. He is near us and he studies us. He knows us well. He knows our weaknesses. And he's relentless. He'll keep coming back as long as we let him. And we have to resist him every time he comes towards us so that we can fight with our great God and our King. And hopefully we can all be assured that we will have a home with him in heaven one day. If we can aid you in any way this afternoon to become a better soldier of Christ or to commit yourself to Him and to be a part of His army, if we can help you in any way, we invite you to come as we stand and as we sing together.